fine Saturday, Susan convinced the nurses to let her take me out in a wheelchair. It was October now, the air brisk and chill, the sky a bright, bright blue. There was a hint of wood smoke in the air. No airplanes in sight, no bombers, no invasion, at least not yet. I wore a cardigan and a dress Susan found for me at a jumble sale. I had a blanket tucked over my chest and a bare left leg. Susan pushed the wheelchair. Jane skipped alongside. We'll go up the high street and have tea, Susan said. But first I want to show you something. She stopped the chair outside a church. It was larger than our village church, but otherwise much the same, brown and rectangular, with a tall steeple and a graveyard filled with upright stones. Keep your voices down, Susan whispered, and don't point, but look over there. See the people and the empty grave? That's the hole in the ground. And the wooden box? The box is called a coffin. This is the final part of the funeral. The first part happens inside the church. Now they're going to bury the deceased.
Deceased? Asked Jamie.
The dead person, said Susan.
In the ground?
His voice squeaked.
Well, yes, Susan said. Where would you want to put them?
I'd noticed that the stones in our village church's graveyard had names on them, but I hadn't known it meant people's bodies were buried there. I said, I never thought about it before.
I had hoped we could bury your mother in our village, said Susan.
Why? Asked Jamie. So you would have a memorial, a place to go and think about her, to think about the good memories.
I would have to think hard to find any good memories.
But she was cremated, I said. I could remember words, I just didn't always understand them.
Yes, Susan said, that means her body was burned to ashes.
I turned to her. You're joking. She looked slightly uncomfortable.
No, she said, it's actually a perfectly respectful way to treat the dead, and useful in wartime.
I said, if we don't have her body, how do we know she's really dead?
You'll get a death certificate, Susan said, in the mail, like your birth certificate. Only the opposite.
Oh, I said. I kept my birth certificate in a special box.
When it comes, I'll give it to you, Susan said.
You can keep it safe for us.
I nodded. That would be good.
Jamie said, can we have tea now? She squeezed his hand.
Of course.
In the tea shop, I scowled at the prices on the menu. If we weren't evacuees anymore, I said, the government isn't going to keep paying for you to take care of us. You won't be able to afford it.
Susan's bombed house had been fancy, but she always said she didn't have much money, and she didn't have a job.
I'll take care of it, Susan said. I told you, I started the paperwork. I'm going to become your legal guardian.
I like the sound of that. Guardian was a strong word.
As soon as I'm out of the hostel, I'll find work, I said.
Susan smiled. Oh, Ada, she said, please relax. You don't need to worry about money.
Who paid for my surgery? I asked. And the hospital, and the boarding house, and all our new things.
Susan shook her head.
I'm not sure you need to know.
I do, I said.
She sighed. I bought your clothes, she said. The WVS took up a collection to help with our living expenses.
She took a deep breath.
Lord and Lady Thornton paid for your surgery.
Lady Thornton, I said.
Jamie took a sip of tea. They got gobs of money.
They did, but it didn't mean I wanted them spending it on me.
So now I have to be grateful, I said. To Lady Thornton. I'd never met Lord Thornton. He always was away working for the war.
I hope you're already grateful to her, Susan said.
All the things she's done for you, getting you help with butter, giving you Maggie's old clothes, not to mention the cottage we're going to be living in.
Jamie looked up at Susan. She gave us you.
That was true. In the end, Lady Thornton's arrangements for Jamie and me had been to sling us into her automobile and dump us at Susan's house. It had been the best possible thing, though it didn't seem so at the time.
I don't want to have to be grateful, I said.
Susan smiled.
I understand, she said. Do it anyhow.
Grateful to the iron-faced woman. Grateful for Reach Newcastle on my leg.
Grateful to be tied into the bed when I got caught trying to use a bathroom again. Grateful that nurses woke me when my nightmares had me screaming. Keep going, Susan said. The only way out of this is straight through. She brought me books from the library, wool from the shops and new knitting needles, pencils and paper to pass the time, letters from Maggie, away at Walden School, a game of draughts I could play with Jamie in the afternoons. Courage, she said. Is that the same thing as being grateful? I said. I felt rebellious. Susan nodded. Sometimes. November 29th was Jamie's 7th birthday. Susan and I gave him a tiny cake and a tin toy airplane, a Spitfire, the kind of fighter plane Maggie's brother Jonathan flew. 3 days later, the doctor cut off my latest cast. Then, instead of getting my leg ready for a new cast, the way he usually did, he said, "Right, let's have a bit of gravity." He put his hands on my waist and lifted me off a table onto my feet so that I was standing. Susan was smiling. The doctor said, "Go on, put a bit of weight on it." I held the edge of the table and pushed my right leg down. I felt my right ankle move the smallest bit. It hurt, but I expected that. I shifted more weight to my right leg. My legs trembled. I hadn't used them in so long. I was standing on both feet. I pulled my nightgown aside to look down. 2 feet, 10 toes, all pointed forward. 10 toenails, all facing up. My right foot was smaller and scarred, and the skin on it still had a callus from how the top used to be the bottom. But it looked like a foot, not a monstrosity. Ma might not have screamed at me for having a foot like this. The surgery had worked. I didn't have a club foot anymore. As I stared, my feet grew blurry, then cleared, then grew blurry again. Great blob and tears fell out of my eyes. My shoulders started to shake, and I might have crumbled except that Susan threw her arms round me. She hugged me the way she'd hugged me the morning she found me in London, after the bombing, still alive. I don't know about you, but I'm getting ready. I'm getting used to this hugging business, she whispered in my ear. It made me laugh even though I was sobbing. I stood and sobbed and stood and sobbed and stood and stood and stood. Jamie ran into the ward that afternoon carrying a cardboard box. Show me your foot, he said. I was lying on top of my blankets with my 2 bare feet stretched in front of me. Go on, I told him. I'd been admiring my foot all afternoon. Jamie climbed onto the bed. His fingers traced a thick scar around my ankle. "Caw," he said, "it's like a real foot now." I wouldn't have guessed my foot could change so much. My ankle would never bend correctly, the doctor said, and the insides of it weren't normal. But I would be able to walk with the bottom of my foot against the ground, and I would be able to wear real shoes on both feet. That was more than enough. "Here," Susan said, handing Jamie's box to me, in celebration. I lifted the lid. It was a pair of shoes. Leather shoes with a strap round the ankle, like the ones Maggie wore. Good new shoes that were almost impossible to find in the shops anymore. Jamie said, "We bought for them weeks ago, the day before your surgery." I slid the left shoe on first. Then I reached down and put my new right foot in, stuck the toes inside the shoe, pushed the heel down, buckled the strap. The right shoe was a little loose. Both shoes had room at the toes, room to grow. I could wear the shoes a long time. In shoes, my feet looked identical. You couldn't even see the scar. No but a monster with that ugly foot. That's what Mam had said. Over and over, until it took everything I had not to believe her. I would never have to hear that again. I felt a wave of sudden overwhelming despair. "This is all it took," I said, looking up at Susan. "A couple of months in a hospital fixed it. All my life I've been miserable because of that foot." Tears came in Susan's eyes. "Your mother didn't know," she said. "She did," I said. "She wanted a reason to hate me. Jamie looked from me to Susan, and back to me again. He whispered, I thought you'd be happy. Oh, Jamie, I took a deep breath. I am happy. I swung my legs to the floor. Help me walk. Careful, Susan said. Your legs aren't yet strong. Jamie will take care of me. I held my hands out and let him balance me. We started to walk down the room. One step, then another. Left foot, right foot. Before, when I walked on my bad foot, the bones crunched. The skin tore and bled. Every step hurt more. Now every step hurt less. My legs were weak and shaky, but I was walking. You're doing it, Jamie said. I could scarcely believe it. Pretty soon, I said, I'll be running faster than you. Jamie grinned. I'll still be faster, he said. I'll always be faster. We'll not. We'll too. I wanted to sleep in my shoes, but the nurses made me sleep with my right foot in a brace and said, only for a little while, they said. I spent another few weeks in the hospital doing exercises and strengthening my legs. And then, in the third week of December, we said goodbye to the nurses and the doctors and the ankle brace and the crutches and everything. I put my knee shoes on over thick winter stockings, and we went home. Chapter 5 is going to be next.